The title of today's sermon is Understanding the Sabbath. A short list of the characteristics that God has revealed about the Sabbath shows that the Sabbath is a holy convocation, a sign, a delight, and a rest. The Sabbath was blessed by God and sanctified by God. The Sabbath is prophetic in its meaning, and it is to be remembered. The Sabbath was made for man, but it belongs to God. And the Sabbath is a feast. The purpose of this sermon is to bring some clarity to our understanding of God's Sabbath day, and to specifically address the matter of eating out on the Sabbath day. We will begin by looking at some of the basics of the Sabbath, again, from God's point of view in the Bible. We must possess right spiritual discernment in order to correctly understand the mind of Christ. One of the things that I wish to accomplish in today's sermon is to document from the Bible, always, a number of the foundational aspects of the Sabbath from God's point of view. We read that the Sabbath is a sign between God and His people. Now, brethren, I'm not going to turn to all the scriptures today because there's too much to cover, but I would like to notify everyone who's listening in that these sermon notes transcribed are posted on the website, and they are fleshed out. All the scriptures are there with the numbers if you want to go back and compare those to your notes or use them for your notes. God said that the Sabbath was His test commandment to prove us, to test us, to see if we would be obedient. The Israelites never properly understood the purpose of the Sabbath. And that's to be expected because they were unconverted. The question that we must ask ourselves is whether or not we, the converted brethren, properly understand the purpose of the Sabbath. Since the death of Herbert W. Armstrong, there has arisen among some of the brethren in God's church a new test commandment, not the one that we find in the scriptures, but a new test. The test commandment, their hallmark doctrine that sets them apart from other Christians, is that they do not eat out on the Sabbath. Their objections to eating out on the Sabbath generally revolve around a number of aspects related to the keeping of the Sabbath. They sincerely wish to keep the Sabbath properly. I believe that. They desire to do what God says. They're good people, very good people. They fully realize that there are many who attend with us, who do not keep the Sabbath as they should, and they use that for their rationale. This sermon is for them, especially since they have been taught that paying for food on the Sabbath or doing business on the Sabbath is against God's will. They assume that people outside the body of Christ are being violated on the Sabbath by causing them to work or to do business on the Sabbath. And some of their conclusions are based on the book of Nehemiah. What does the Bible reveal about eating out and doing business on the Holy Sabbath day? There are some aspects that we will look into in today's sermon. If we take the different aspects, one by one, of keeping the Sabbath according to the scriptures, I believe we can begin to gain a better idea from God's point of view. Not many people have gotten this Sabbath-keeping understanding down correctly throughout history. All through history, people have not kept the Sabbath properly. I believe we need to give the Sabbath a good look. Let's start beginning in Genesis chapter 2. Let's see if we are able to find the correct fellowship, the convocation, the worship, and the spirit of the Sabbath observation that God intends for us to have. It is good that we review what God has to say from time to time, even with regard to the Sabbath day itself. We think, boy, I've been keeping the Sabbath forever. I know how to keep the Sabbath. Let's review it and look at what God says. Everyone within the sound of my voice desires to keep the Sabbath day holy as God intends it to be observed. What is the mind of Christ on this matter? What is God's mind in this matter? What's God's intent? Our heart's desire, brethren, is to please God. The Sabbath day is holy. We'll touch on some of these aspects. It's holy. That means that it's set apart from the other days of the week for spiritual reasons and purposes. Our mission is to make the Sabbath more spiritual, not more physical. The Sabbath is the seventh day of the week. We read in Genesis 2 and verse 2, "And on the seventh day God ended his work which he had made, and he rested on the Sabbath day from all his work which he had made." Here God shows us an important component of the Sabbath day, and that is rest. We know God doesn't get tired, but God is teaching us about the Sabbath day. God rested on the seventh day from all his work, giving us an example. And God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it. God elevated the Sabbath day. That's what it means when he blessed it. He elevated the Sabbath day above the other days, and he sanctified it. That means he made it a holy day. Sanctified means that God set the Sabbath day apart for spiritual purposes. What we find then is that God initiated the spiritual process for man that would be a major component in mankind becoming eventually children of God, now children of God, and eventually born into the eternal family of God. Now, God enjoys a good feast. That's hard for us to think of God in those terms. The concept of great abundance on the table is symbolic of God's multitudinous blessings. What is the literal meaning of the word feast? That's a question that we need to ask ourselves. Physically speaking, a feast is a great meal with all the trimmings. The Sabbath is designed by God to also be a spiritual feast. God is teaching us to be like he is. And more than anything, we want to be in his kingdom. The Bible defines what a feast is. And there are examples. In Genesis 19, we read about a feast. That's the first place I could find the word feast mentioned in the scriptures. In Genesis 21 in verse 8, this is when Isaac was being weaned. It says, "And the child Isaac grew and was weaned, and Abraham made a great feast the same day that Isaac was weaned." That's joy and celebration with great abundance of food and drink being shared. Turn over to Leviticus chapter 23. The Sabbath is a feast. That's the way that God wants us to think of it, brethren. We in God's church need to understand the spirit and purpose of the Sabbath. Let's establish from the scriptures that the Sabbath is very much a feast of the Lord. Leviticus 23 and verse 2, "Speak unto the children of Israel and say unto them, concerning the feasts of the Lord, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocation, even these are my feasts." Now, many of the brethren in God's church, when they read that, they think, God's talking about these feasts, like the one we just got back from, the Feast of Tabernacles, or the Feast of Trumpets, or Pentecost, those kind of feasts. But notice very carefully, brethren, the very first feast mentioned is the weekly Sabbath. The weekly Sabbath is a feast. Notice verse 3. 6 days shall work be done, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of rest. And we'll see a number of the attributes and aspects of the Sabbath just in this verse. It's a rest. It's a holy convocation. You shall do no work therein. It is the Sabbath of the Lord in all your dwellings. You know, I find it interesting that it is the Sabbath of the Lord in all your dwellings. Brethren, the Sabbath begins where you live. It begins where I live. When this was written, there were no synagogues or churches at this point, and there were no political corporate organizations for that matter either. It is the Sabbath of the Lord in all your dwellings, God said, wherever you are living. How did the Sabbath observance come to mean to so many that attendance with one of the political corporate organizations was mandatory? Jesus clearly said, where two or three are gathered together in my name, there I am in the midst of them. We see here also that there is no work on the Sabbath. As we go along today, we will see that this no work concept is designed and defined to allow for miracles, emergencies, good works, temple service, and even animals in distress, among other exemptions. There are exemptions to God's rule about no work on the Sabbath. Now, he has quite a few exemptions. There are many exemptions to this no work on the Sabbath concept. I think that's why the Pharisees were so upset with Jesus' Sabbath activities. The Sabbath is a delight. God's intent is that we make the Sabbath a delightful feast. That's what God intends. That's what the scriptures show. And you can't find anything to the contrary. We see emphatically also that the Sabbath day is a holy convocation, an assembly, a coming together. Who we meet with, how we meet, what we do with one another are very important things to consider. There are many shut-ins that could use a good visit. Would that constitute a holy convocation? One scripture that is improperly quoted and used is in the book of Hebrews, where it says, "Don't forsake the assembling of yourselves together." And that has come to mean to some people that you must meet with one of the political corporate organizations. We'll take a look today and see what the Bible actually says. We'll read the verses in context and try to bring some clarity to the Sabbath. We need to take a good look at what the scriptures say to ensure that we are not drifting off course. That's always important, brethren, because many have drifted off course, and we pray that God guides us and we don't drift off course. The Sabbath was made for man. Too many brethren learned only that the Sabbath observance was mandatory and that there was a long list of things not to do on the Sabbath. And to too many people, that is the sum total of their understanding about the Sabbath. You got to go on the Sabbath. And there's a lot of things you don't do on the Sabbath. Brethren, there is so much more to the Sabbath than that. Let's go to Deuteronomy chapter 14. Please turn over there with me. Let's begin by talking about this concept. What about paying money on the Sabbath? What does the scriptures say? Because some people say, "I will not spend money on the Sabbath because it is against the law of God." Let's see what the law of God does say. Brethren, there is not one single place in the Holy Scriptures that defines business or commerce as the exchange of money. There's not one single place in the Scriptures that prohibits paying for something on the Sabbath. One worldwide evangelist, he's deceased now, felt that the problem was with the exchange of money for food on the Sabbath. He came to the conclusion, you cannot do that. It is prohibited by the scriptures. He concluded that was business. So he would make, and this is what he did, he'd make arrangements at the feast to pay for the hall and the restaurant bill on a different day. He wouldn't pay for those things on the day that he received goods and services. Brethren, the Bible never intimates any such thing. Let's review what God says. God says that we are to use money for our feast food. Deuteronomy 14 and verse 23. Brethren, please turn here and read closely with me, because this is what we lock into our minds. What God says, not what somebody's come along and tried to improve or gotten out of balance or whatever and changed it up from what the scriptures actually say. Deuteronomy 14 and verse 23. This is about eating food at a feast before the Lord. Verse 23. "And you shall eat before the Lord your God." This is talking about a feast, Sabbath, holy days, all together. "You shall eat before the Lord in the place which he shall choose to place his name there. The tithe of your corn, of your wine, of your oil, and the firstlings of the herds of your flock. See, in an agricultural society, these people had saved these things up for a great feast to the Lord. That you may learn, okay, there's a purpose in this, that you may learn to reverence the Lord your God always. Okay, this is how we learn to revere God properly. Eating before the Lord is one of the ways. Verse 24. So God says, okay, I realize that, you know, it's hard to bring those geese and sheep and lambs and cows or whatever all the way to the feast site. So he says in verse 24, and if the way be too long for you, if it's too far so that you're not able to carry it, or the place be too far from you, which the Lord your God shall choose to set his name there, when the Lord your God has blessed you, verse 25, then, here's what you do, then shall you turn it in to money and bind up the money in your hand. Now, I hope your translation reads like mine. God is talking about money to eat before the Lord at the feast. And you shall go to the place which the Lord your God shall choose. Okay, so God says, sell the cow, get the money, go to the feast. So you don't have to have a cattle drive on your way to the feast every year, a long distance. Verse 26, Deuteronomy 14 and verse 26. And you shall bestow that money. That means pay for whatsoever your soul desires after. For oxen, I have in my margin, a beefsteak, or for sheep, or for wine, or for strong drink, whatever your mixed drink favorite is. Get one every year at the feast. Or for whatsoever your soul desires. And you shall eat there before the Lord your God, and you shall rejoice. You see this eating and this rejoicing and paying your money to have these good things on the feast is what God desires. You and your household. And the Levite, it goes on to say, God says, use your money to purchase food at the feast. The Bible does not support the supposition that states that it is wrong to purchase a meal on the Sabbath or the holy days. You cannot find it in the scriptures. And just so that the point is not missed, obviously, note this, brethren, obviously, if you are paying for your meal, as God says to do, someone is selling it to you. It takes two people for a transaction, the buyer and the seller. If you're paying for your meal, as God says, bind it up, turn it into money, bestow that money on a beefsteak, someone is selling it to you. The point is clearly resolved by Scripture. Brethren, there are so many things that we use and take for granted. We use our electricity and our city water on the Sabbath. That's not commerce or business. That's not what you do for a living. But it does cost money and it does get paid for. Some people have erroneously gotten the idea that since they pay for those services on another day of the week, that makes it okay in God's sight. Brethren, that is not what God is about. That kind of reasoning is legalistic and superficial. It's not based in Christianity at all. We rent our rooms at the feast and on the holy days, don't we? Some brethren are even earning interest on their savings accounts or their investments on the Sabbath because, you know, you don't check on them but once a month or once a year, but they're earning interest all the time. It's not wrong to use public utilities on the Sabbath, and somebody is down there making electricity. Somebody's working today and manning the generators and the pumps for the water and even the sewage so that, you know, God's people can have restrooms on the Sabbath. Somebody's working and getting paid on the Sabbath day. In the world tomorrow, when God's Spirit is poured out on all flesh, there will still be utilities. Supposedly electricity and water and restrooms and kitchens and heating and air conditioning, and someone will be providing those things on the Sabbath day. We're not going to sit in the dark and in the cold in the wintertime on the Sabbath in the millennium and call it a light. That is not a delight. Let's go over to Exodus 12. And again, please turn over with me. We'll look at this aspect about making other people work on the Sabbath day. did God expect that some work should be done in serving up food on Sabbath days? Did God think this through? Did God know that somebody's going to have to get up and prepare something to put it in front of people to eat? Notice what God says. And these, brethren, are feast days here that we're talking about. The Sabbath is one of the feast days. We saw that no work was to be done on the Sabbath, right? But please notice God's exception to the rule where it applies to meal preparation. We're talking about meal preparation now. Exodus 12 and verse 16. In the first day shall be a holy convocation. This is speaking about a feast. And in the seventh day there shall be a holy convocation, another feast. No manner of work shall be done therein, except, here's the exception to the rule, except that which every man must eat, that only may be done of you. So God clearly says that there's an exception so that you can eat. He knows that somebody's got to go get the food. Now, he's not talking about killing a beef and dressing it out. He's talking about going over wherever the food is stored and preparing it so that it's edible. God clearly says that work to prepare a meal on the Sabbath may be done, that which every man must eat. Let's look at a New Testament example in Matthew 8. And brethren, we all understand that atonement, the Feast of Atonement, is a specific exclusion to this rule. Atonement is excluded. Atonement, when you read about atonement, it doesn't say no work. It says no work at all. So that exclusion is removed. You don't prepare a meal on atonement. Let's go to Matthew chapter 18 and verse 14. And we're skipping over to some of the dealings that Jesus Christ had, and Jesus was being ridiculed by the Pharisees and so forth. In Matthew 18 in verse 14, just picking it up in the middle of the thought here, and when Jesus was come into Peter's house, he saw his mother's wife laid and sick of a fever. So Peter was married. His mother's wife was sick. This is the kind of sickness where you're laying in the bed and you can't get up with a fever. Peter's mother-in-law was so sick in bed, she's burning up with a fever. It was obviously more than a small case of the sniffles. She was bedridden. Verse 15, Matthew 8 and verse 15. And Jesus touched her hand, and the fever left her. Miraculous healing on the Sabbath. Jesus got in trouble over and over for performing good deeds on the Sabbath day because the Pharisees didn't understand the spirit and the intent and the purpose of the Sabbath. He touched her hand and the fever left her, and she arose and ministered unto them. Brethren, she went to work on the Sabbath. She ministered unto them. You can imagine how busy Jesus Christ was and the apostles. They're learning, they're healing, they're teaching, they're working on the Sabbath. Jesus is profaning the Sabbath, as he indicates is right to do. It's right to teach the Word of God on the Sabbath. The Pharisees, however, exerted so much fear upon the townspeople that they would not approach Jesus until the Sabbath was over with, at least most of them. They were just staying clear. They didn't want to be ridiculed by the Pharisees. Verse 16, when the even was come, okay, brethren, that's how we know it's the Sabbath. The Sabbath ended, the sun set, the even was come. They brought unto Jesus many that were possessed with devils, and he cast out the spirits with his word, and he healed all that were sick. So we see that on this particular Sabbath day, Peter's home is like Grand Central Station with people coming and going. But I want you to notice that Peter's mother-in-law got up and went to work serving them, because the scriptures say it's okay. Don't do any work except that which every man must eat. She was waiting on them, ministering to them on the Sabbath day. All this serving and ministering was in keeping with the proper observance of the Christian Sabbath. That's why it's in the Bible, to tell us these are the things that we can do. This is the way that the Sabbath is to be kept. But then the question arises, what about the people in the world preparing meals for us? Now, Paul says there's a clear distinction between those in the world and our brethren in God's church. We'll touch on it later, but Paul says, you know, don't associate with certain people. But then he had to write back to the Corinthians and said, don't associate with certain sinful people in the church, because in the world is full of sinners. And he says, you would have to leave the planet, you know, to get away from the people in the world. They're different. Paul shows this clear distinction between those in the world and our brethren in God's church. Exodus 20 and verse 10. You know it very well, brethren. It talks about the Sabbath, keeping the Sabbath. The seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall not do any work. Again, we know that there are exclusions now, don't we? But look at who it's limited to. Your son and your daughter, your manservant and your maidservant, your cattle shouldn't work, nor the stranger that is within your gates. Whoever is in your employ, whoever is in your household, whoever you have control over, you don't make them work and you kick back and take the day off, God says. Workers at restaurants are not our servants, nor are they of our household, nor are they within our gates. I tell you what, if you don't believe that, and I've seen people, unfortunately, in the church try to do this, you go up to them and you tell them to go home. Give up their Sabbath job. And just see, watch, and see if they follow your command. They'll look at you like you don't know what you're talking about. They want to work. They want to be there. They're not listening to you. They're not called of God. They do not work for us. We have no control over them like we do those in our own household. In an agrarian society, we are forbidden to work our animals. Like, you wouldn't hook up a mule or an ox and let him tread grain all day on the Sabbath while you take the Sabbath off. God says, even rest your animals one day in seven, you know, turning the mills and turning out the grain and so forth. Now, I would apply this. The scriptures don't say it, but I wouldn't allow any mechanical equipment to do productive work on the Sabbath. But I would insist that the air condition run for an elderly person on a hot day. Am I being a hypocrite? Am I being duplicitous? Do I have one set of rules for one and another set of rules for somebody else? God doesn't want me to be engaged in my productive business on the Sabbath day. But brethren, can we tell the difference about what to do and what not to do? God doesn't want us eating cold weenies and beanies on his feast days. That is not his intent. God desires that we greatly enjoy and delight in his Sabbaths. When we go to the feast, it's okay. It's proper to eat breakfast prepared by the motel staff down at the complimentary breakfast bar. And we need not be conflicted about when and how it's paid for. Whether it's paid for, you know, at the beginning of the feast, the end of the feast, or on the Sabbath day. Please do not be so pharisaical as to consider things like, if the price of breakfast is included in my motel bill and I don't have to pay for it on the Sabbath, then I'm approved in God's sight. God is not like that. That is not how God thinks at all. When Jesus Christ healed on the Sabbath, it was considered by the Pharisees to be work. But Jesus Christ was not breaking the Sabbath. But he was certainly accused of it by those who had no understanding. We're supposed to follow Christ's example, not make hard and fast rules that go beyond, far beyond what God intended and what God meant. You see, it's real easy. I can make a rule like, it's wrong to eat out on the Sabbath. Then I can say, I don't eat out on the Sabbath. And all of a sudden, I'm righteous, and everybody else doesn't measure up to my righteousness. Some people would say, well, you know, these things are hard to understand. It's just safer to keep the letter of the law on the Sabbath. Again, brethren, Jesus Christ doesn't think that way. Jesus Christ isn't up there saying, oh, and I'm just waiting for somebody to cross the line so that I can smite them. Don't think in terms of safer or not safe. King David was a man after God's own heart. And he certainly did everything with a great deal of zesto and zeal. It's one of the things that God appreciated about David. He didn't hold back and go, well, you know, I don't know whether to try to build this temple, and I don't know whether to kill Goliath or not. He was just wholehearted. God doesn't think in terms of safer. David, again, with the showbread. Some people say, oh, he should have played it safe rather than what he did. Playing it safe on the Sabbath rather than serving the brethren is the same thing as burying our talents. The Sabbath is a feast day. It's a spiritual feast. But it's not wrong to bring food to someone in a nursing home, nor is it wrong for a hospital, or a nursing home to prepare hot meals for its patients, nor is it wrong to take an elderly person to a buffet on the Sabbath. It's not wrong to fellowship with scattered brethren on the Sabbath, even breaking bread together. We are not making people work for our pleasure. We cannot look down on those who do not keep the Sabbath like we're better than they are. You know, it'll be wonderful when everyone keeps the Sabbath. And we all have those big potlucks on the Sabbath. But that's the millennium. Let's talk about potluck meals for just a moment. God knows that there is work that is required in serving up a feast to make the Sabbath a delight. Yet, there is the preparation day for getting things ready. And this is a clause that those who say you don't eat out on the Sabbath, they say, well, it should all be done on the preparation day. That's when you get things ready. But there is still a great deal to be done on the Sabbath day itself. Just ask any of the ladies who do the yeoman's task of putting on a church potluck. They've got to get out the warmers. They do the hauling, the loading. They've got to get out the utensils, the cups and the drinks and the pots and pans, even the garbage bags and all the cleanup. And then after they serve it, clean up and repack it all again. There is a great deal to be done. And some husbands say, you know, that's okay for my wife to work like that, but you know, when I'm taking a long trip, I'm not going to stop in a fast food place where they just flip a burger and pass it out the window to you, because that's breaking the Sabbath. There's no balance there, brethren. That's not understanding what the Sabbath is about. Yes, God said there was to be no planting and no harvesting and no butchering cattle or hauling loads to the market. But it is proper to serve up meals on the Sabbath. Let's go over to Exodus. Chapter 35. Another point comes to mind, and that has to do with one of their exclusions. They put all these together. Each one of these specifically exclude their argument about it's wrong to eat out on the Sabbath, but somehow they feel like collectively, well, you put them all together and still you shouldn't be able to eat out on the Sabbath. But these arguments that I'm putting forth, is every argument that I've heard and every single one the Bible specifically says, in certain circumstances, certain ways, it is proper to keep the Sabbath doing these things. Let's look at this one about no fire on the Sabbath. You know, as important as the construction of the temple was, work was to stop for the Sabbath. God's temple was being built. And you know, even somebody like me would say, well, that's really important. Let's keep working on the temple on the Sabbath. But God commanded no temple construction fire be built. And that's what this verse in Exodus 35 is going to be talking about. I'll just give you the heads up, brethren. It's the same thing as when Jesus Christ died and he was buried. And there was not time for his body to be anointed with the sweet-smelling spices and so forth. That's a lot of work. And yet, that could be postponed. Whether you did it the first, second, or third day wasn't important. And God used that to his greater honor and glory. By the time the women got there to do it, he had risen. But the point is that was not work to be done on the Sabbath. Just like the temple fire. God says, don't work on the temple on the Sabbath. Exodus 35 and verse 2. You've had time to turn there. 6 days shall work be done, but on the seventh day there shall be to you a holy day, a Sabbath of rest to the Lord. Whosoever does work therein shall be put to death. God's serious. Don't work on the temple on this particular day. And in verse 3, the one that is so often quoted out of context here, you shall kindle no fire throughout your habitations upon the Sabbath day. Now that's well marked in the Bible of those who say you can't eat out on the Sabbath and you can't cook a meal on the Sabbath at home, not even for your elderly parents or whatever. Some of them will not even make toast. There's no fire. There's just a glow of the coal. You can't do that either. Where do they get that from? This verse right here, you shall kindle no fire throughout your habitations upon the Sabbath day. But brethren, let's see what God is talking about. Because to us, that might sound like, oh, you can't even have a little fire for a heater to warm a room on a freezing day, or you can't have a fire on the stove to prepare a meal. But that is not what is being spoken of here. When we read in context, we find that this is not what God is speaking of at all. God is saying that there are to be no blast furnace fires or forges for molten metal. Now, I don't know whether there's a Hebrew word for blast furnace or, you know, those kind of forges and so forth. I don't know Hebrew. But I can read this in context. Here they are making, we can look and see what they're doing. They're making metal castings from molten metal. And as you read, beginning in verse 10, Exodus 35 and verse 10, it's talking about what they are making. They're making candlesticks and altars and brass gates and pillars and sockets. Read verse 21, Exodus 35 and 21. Exodus 35 and verse 21. And they came, everyone whose heart stirred him up, and everyone of whom his spirit made willing, and they brought the Lord's offering to do what? The work of the tabernacle of the congregation. They were building the tabernacle and all the molten accoutrements, that big brass laver and this big brass gate on the altar and all that kind of stuff. That was hard work, purifying these metals and melting them and forging them and all of that kind of stuff. Those are construction fires that God's talking about. Brethren, I had a metal fabrication facility in my construction career, personally. And I can tell you from firsthand experience that working with molten metal is not something to engage in on the Sabbath day. That's what God is speaking of here. But there are people in God's church who will not start their car, they won't start their motor, their engine, or they won't make toast in a toaster because they believe that's too much fire. They should read the Bible in context. These verses are addressing the tabernacle construction, later on the temple construction. Let's go to Nehemiah. Please turn there, because the ace in the hole for those who will not eat out on Sabbath is they say, well, Nehemiah forbids it. Brethren, let's go to Nehemiah and see what he says. I'd like to ask a question. What would Nehemiah think if he were resurrected and saw a number of brethren breaking bread in public on the Sabbath, you know, at a sidewalk cafe or a restaurant or whatever kind of facility he would find them in? As a godly man, Nehemiah would have the exact same response Jesus had when the apostles were eating grain. Remember when they were going through the field eating the grain? The book of Nehemiah does not prohibit the purchase of a meal on the Sabbath day. Let me repeat that, brethren. Nowhere in the book of Nehemiah does it prohibit the purchase of a meal on the Sabbath day. Some of our brethren have fallen into a spiritual trap because they've been taught that it's more righteous not to observe the Sabbath as a feast day. And the Sabbath is a feast day. Jesus explained to the Pharisees that they were wrong in applying the law in the exact opposite way from that which God intended. Over and over, the Pharisees got it backward. That is what happened with the book of Nehemiah. Yes, technically, you could say that the disciples were harvesting grain, and the Pharisees tried to make something sinister out of it, but not from God's point of view. The spirit of the law intends that we do good on the Sabbath. You can put this one in your notes, brethren. Mark 3 and verse 4. Jesus said, it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath day. Now we'll have to go somewhere else to figure out what Jesus Christ means by to do good. To do good on the Sabbath day. Back to Nehemiah. Nehemiah clearly very clearly distinguished between trade that is big business as usual all week long, big business for the purpose of commerce on one hand, and having a meal with the brethren on the other hand. Please, brethren, do not read something into the scripture that is not there. Let's read closely, and please follow along with me here in Nehemiah. And if you see something that says to you, you can't have a meal on the Sabbath, I want you to show it to me and to the other brethren. Brethren, it's not there. Nehemiah 13 and verse 15. Nehemiah says, in those days saw I in Judah some treading wine presses on the Sabbath. Okay, that's hard work. You have to haul the grapes from the field. You have to haul them in the big baskets. You have to dump them into the wine presses, and you have to squeeze them and stomp them and whatever they did in those days. Bringing in the sheaves, that has to do with out there harvesting grain, hundreds of acres of grain harvested and loaded and brought in. And laden donkeys, as also wine, grapes, and figs, and all manners, all kind of burdens, which they brought into Jerusalem on the Sabbath day. So all of this produce, you know, we would say truckloads, or they had donkey loads and, you know, wheelbarrow loads and however they hauled it loads, but it was being brought in to Jerusalem on the Sabbath day. And I testified against them in the day wherein they sold victuals. Okay, brethren, that verse is all about the economy, the manufacturing, the harvesting. This is not at all about a single meal. These are donkey loads, wagon train loads. Now, this word victuals, I want to touch on that because I think that is one of the things that people stumbled on. I don't know about you, but I grew up hearing this word, and it's pronounced victuals. Victuals and victuals is the same word. It's pronounced victuals in the cowboy movies, and it referred to, you know, a plate of beans. They'd have the old chuck wagon, and the starving cowboys would come up there at the end of a long day and say, "You got any victuals?" And he'd hand him a plate of beans. And so when we read victuals, we think it's a plate of food. That is not what this is talking about at all. The movie's called A Cowboy's Plate of Beans, Victuals. But the scriptural meaning of victuals refers to the entire slaughtered beef. It started off with processed deer. If you look up this word, you'll be really surprised at how it was used throughout the scriptures. As a processed deer or slaughtered beef, picture a place where they slaughter beef. They have these big sides of beef at the slaughterhouse. That's what was being hauled in. You know, maybe the beef is split in two, and one side's thrown over one side of the donkey, and one side's the other side of the donkey, and they're toting it because it might weigh a couple hundred pounds. Those that Nehemiah prohibited from entering Jerusalem made their livelihood from hunting wild venison or rounding up livestock. This word that's translated victual does not refer to a meal of food. Victuals is not a plate of food. It's a wagon load of produce being spoken of here. There were mule trains laden of wine and tools and hardware and produce. Nehemiah was not talking about somebody's lunch. He was talking about big business. It would be like interstate commerce today. Now, let me add here, brethren. Meals on Wheels, I don't know if you have that in your town, but that's where people prepare meals at some big cafeteria for those who are closed in. Meals on Wheels on the Sabbath is perfectly fine for those who are on hospice and those who are elderly and those who are shut in. That is entirely proper. But, brethren, ask ourselves this question. Are we able to discern the difference between hauling truckloads of textiles and goods as a matter of regular business like we've done all week? Are we able to discern between that and giving care to those in need? We need to be, brethren. There's a difference. Are we able to discern the difference between true Christian practice and the letter of the law? There's a difference. We must come to that. Let's continue in Nehemiah. We come to verse 16. There dwelt men of Tyre also therein, which brought fish and all manner of ware. That's where we get our hardware from. And I don't know what this includes. Maybe shovels and spades and plows and forks and knives and scythes and all manner of ware. It just all this hardware. And sold on the Sabbath unto the children of Judah and in Jerusalem. Okay, they're both wrong. The ones that brought in all of this hardware, this warehoused hardware, and especially the children of Judah are wrong for going down and buying it. But you can see them saying, you know, if I get down there first, I'll get the sharpest knife or I'll get the best spoon or whatever. And they were doing it, the children of Judah, and it was taking place in Jerusalem. Nehemiah saw that, and he was exasperated because that is what you don't do on the Sabbath. Verse 17. And I contended with the nobles of Judah. He talked to the leaders, and he said unto them, what evil thing is this that you do and profane the Sabbath day? All right, now, brethren, please picture what's going on out here. We're talking about wagon loads of produce and buying and selling in the marketplace, even on a wholesale level. Nehemiah continues in verse 18. Did not your fathers thus, didn't they do this exact thing? And did not our God bring all this evil upon us? Nehemiah had to come back from captivity to build the walls around Jerusalem and to build up Jerusalem. Did not our God bring all this evil, talking about the captivity, upon us and upon this city, Jerusalem and the walls destroyed? Yet you bring more wrath upon Israel by profaning the Sabbath? How, ask yourself, brother, how were they profaning the Sabbath? Big business as usual on the Sabbath. Business and commerce that is usual during the week is prohibited on the Sabbath, and it is wrong. God intends a day of rest from our physical labors so that we may do good. And I have in my notes, spiritual works. Verse 19. And it came to pass that when the gates of Jerusalem began to be dark before the Sabbath, this is Friday afternoon, I commanded that the gates be shut, and I charged that they should not be opened until after the Sabbath. So these people just kept coming and coming and stopped, stay out. It was not good enough for these people hauling goods. And so Nehemiah took these big doors, and as the Sabbath was beginning on Friday evening, he closed those doors. And he had to guard the doors. He says here at the end of verse 19, and some of my servants set I at the gates. Now we're going to come back to that, so look at that close. Nehemiah put some of his servants at the gates, as guards, gate guards, that there should be no burden be brought in on the Sabbath day. He set guards there to make sure that these burdens, these wagon loads, these mule train, these donkey loads, didn't come in on the Sabbath day. That's what he was putting a stop to. Never have we seen here in Nehemiah any mention of a plate of beans or a meal of food. That's not what is being spoken of at all. Verse 20. So the merchants and the sellers of all kind of ware, all this hardware, they lodged outside of Jerusalem once or twice. This week, next week, they did. Verse 21, after they would come two more times with these doors closed, Nehemiah didn't want to keep those doors closed. He didn't want to have guards on the gate. So he went out after two times and he said, I testified against them and said unto them, why do you lodge about the wall? You know why. They were waiting for the doors to open so they could be first and go in with their wares and make some sales. He says, if you do it again, I'll lay hands on you. I don't know what that means, but I don't want to find out. I will lay hands on you. He was convincing because from that time forth, it says at the end of verse 21, from that time forth came they no more on the Sabbath. So Nehemiah successfully put a stop to this, what I call interstate commerce, truckloads of stuff coming in on Saturday and being sold. Very few people realize what was bothering Nehemiah. There was something bothering him that we haven't talked about. They don't realize what personal offense Nehemiah was concerned about. Nehemiah's transgression or offense in his mind, in his heart, was that he had to cause the Levites to work by standing guard at the gates on the Sabbath to prevent the outsiders from coming into Jerusalem. That was his transgression. He had to take the Levitical priests and put them on the gates as guards and say, you got to work on Saturday and guard these doors. That bothered Nehemiah. He says there in verse 19, I set some of my servants at the gates. So what did he do? Because this was the infraction in Nehemiah's mind. Verse 22, drop down or the next verse, brethren. And I commanded the Levites that they should cleanse themselves. You see, they had become unclean working on the Sabbath. And that they should come and keep the gates. To sanctify the Sabbath day. That's what they had to cleanse themselves for. And he says, remember me, O my God, concerning this also. And spare me according to the greatness of your mercy. He prays for mercy because he caused his men to work on Sabbath. But it was necessary. They weren't profaning the temple. They were out working on the gates. But he prayed that God would accept that. And of course, God did. I guess God's a whole lot more understanding than we are. That's an understatement. God spared Nehemiah. But the book of Nehemiah does not address or forbid what the Bible refers to as a meal wherein every man must eat. As we saw in Exodus 12, in verse 16, a little bit earlier. Brethren, let's go to Hebrews chapter 10. Chapter 10 in the book of Hebrews is about what? It's about sacrifices. Sacrifices are being explained in Hebrews chapter 10. After Paul explained that Jesus Christ has offered one sacrifice for sins, perfecting them that are sanctified forever, he tells us what our part is whenever we interact with other brethren. We read in Hebrews 10 and verse 24, let us consider one another to provoke unto love and to good works. Ask yourselves, brethren, when was the last time you provoked someone to care for someone's needs, someone's special needs? And I looked up this word provoke, and it means provoke. It means to incite. When was the last time you incited someone to do good spiritual works when you met with somebody? Now, Paul did not limit this, because we're still talking about sacrifices here in Hebrews 10. He did not limit this sacrifice of a broken spirit and a contrite heart, which service to one another is. He did not limit this sacrifice to the Sabbath day alone. Brethren, do not assume that we are able to make the Sabbath holier than God has already made it when he blessed it and sanctified it. You know, I know a man who does not treat the Sabbath as a feast day. He's one of the ones that won't do any of these things at all. He won't prepare a meal to eat. He won't eat out on the Sabbath. And you know what? He will not even start his car engine because of that thing about the fires. And when you start your engine, if you have an 8-cylinder car turning a little over 1,000 RPM, just a slow idle, that's 10,000 little fires that form every minute at each piston hit. And so he didn't want to make those fires because he didn't want to build a fire on the Sabbath. And as a result, he no longer attends with the other brethren. He won't go anywhere. He might sit in the dark for all I know. No phone calls, no contact with the brethren. But God says that what we should be doing is caring for others, provoking them to good works. Let's go to the next verse. Paul must have understood that some people would back away like that because he says in verse 25, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves. See, some people, because of the way they want to keep the Sabbath holy, won't even assemble with others. Not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another so much the more as you see the day approaching. Brethren, today there are so many ways for us to assemble with brethren who need to assemble with you. We can write. We can call them on the phone. We can email them. We can text them. We can Skype them. We can go over and visit others of God's people. Visit people. Assemble. Provoke them to good spiritual works. Care for their needs. Find out what they need. These verses reveal our great responsibility when gathered together with other brethren. In many congregations today, brethren, I have found this out. I've talked to many brethren, and you probably know this as well as I do. In many congregations today, no one mentions the sermon or talks about the sermon after services or brings up some kind of beneficial spiritual concept. You don't find spiritual talk and chatter among the brethren after church. But what are we supposed to be doing when we're at church? We are supposed to be provoking one another to love and caring for each other's needs and provoking to good works. But you go to church, and that's not what people are doing at church. Sure, they listen to the sermon, but wow, glad that's over. Now let's get to talking about the stuff we want to talk about. Who today, brethren, among God's people, keeps the Sabbath the way that it's supposed to be kept, provoking one another to love and good works? That's the purpose of the Sabbath. The Sabbath's primary purpose, to the chagrin and consternation of many, is not a social gathering. That's not what we go. If you want to go to social gathering, go to the Baptist church. They dress up really nice, and they have a nice social gathering. Brethren, the Sabbath is a pivotal commandment. We need to understand God's mind, God's point of view when it comes to the Sabbath. Not the things that grow up. Not to make the Sabbath holier than God intended it. Jesus Christ did a lot of work. He did a lot of good things on the Sabbath. How many people who will not eat out on the Sabbath actually spend their time and energies giving God the sacrifice He desires on the Sabbath day? God's not looking for an occasion to smite us or find us guilty of some vague technical infraction. He wants us to grow and develop as Christians in the care and concern and service that we show to one another. We should have a church culture of service and helping each other into the kingdom of God. It is always proper and right to do good on the holy Sabbath day. Well, brethren, that's all we're going to touch on today. But next week, we'll look at some of the examples of how Jesus Christ kept the Sabbath holy. And I think you might be surprised, because Jesus Christ did not meet the expectations of his days. There were Pharisaical people who, you know how the Pharisees were. We'll talk about that next week. Continue to have a wonderful, delightful, and joyous Sabbath day.